When you think about Japan and UFOs or UAPs, Unidentified Anomalous Phenomenon, you might recall the Utsurobune, hollow ship, that I talked about in episode 78, way back in 2021, and which I'm going to revisit later this week in a bonus show, by the way. But that's by far not the only encounter with UAP and NHI, non-human intelligence, in Japan. So today I'm going to talk about the big three UFO incidents, plus an extra one that I find quite intriguing and well documented. Hey, hey, this is Teresa Matsura, and you're listening to Uncanny Japan, the place where I talk about all the more obscure parts of Japanese culture. Be it weird creatures, interesting superstitions, or creepy tales. This is all the fun and fascinating stuff I dig up while doing research for my writing. I hope everyone is well. It's hot here. The rainy season has started. And every once in a while, something large like a 5-pound rat jumps and scampers in the ceiling of my bedroom. I'm fine. Don't worry about me. Oh, the new Steven Spielberg movie has just come out. Disclosure. It won't get to Japan until the fall, of course. But very awesomely, a bunch of podcasts on the Spectre Vision Radio Network are doing UAP and disclosure-themed shows. These encounters happen all over the world, so I thought I'd talk about a couple from Japan today, and then revisit the Utsurobune show I did earlier as a bonus episode later in the week. Remember ad-free versions, me reading various folk tales, as well as the pillow book, are over on Patreon for $5 patrons and above. Okay, let's talk about the three big Japanese UFO or UAP incidents plus one. While the Utsurobune is arguably the most interesting, strange UAP occurrence in Japan, because it is so old, and there was quite a bit written about it, there have been some more recent sightings and encounters, too. So let's look into four of these. The first three are from the 1970s, which was called the UFO boom. Note, the 70s also had the Kuchisake Onna, slit-mouthed woman boom, the Jinmengyo, the fish with a human face, boom, which I talked about in episode 30, and a Yuri Geller spoon-bending boom. The 70s were wild. The first of the big three is called the Kera incident, Kera being the area where it happened. While UFOs did eventually become a big thing everyone was talking about in the 1970s, this was early in the decade, 1972, and as far as I can gather, they still weren't widely known yet. It was August 25th in Kochi City, and a 13-year-old boy named Michio Seo was out walking, probably walking home, when he saw something darting over the rice fields. It looked and behaved sort of like a bat, but it wasn't a bat. Later, he told three of his friends about the strange, hovering, darting around thing, and they decided to go investigate. At 7 p.m., they went out, and after about an hour of searching, they found it. Again, it was flying over the fields, but now that it was getting dark, it was visible because it emanated a silver, pulsating light. One of the boys moved closer. The thing popped loudly, and its color changed to blue. Everyone ran away. A week later, again after dark, they saw the bright object flying around once more. A couple days after that, they found that it had crash-landed. But I also read a version that I liked better, where they used a long-handled bug or fishnet, and they caught it in that. Either way, one of them took it home. It was small, shaped something like a bowler hat. The bottom had some holes in it and designs that were said to look like waves, and another that looked like a bird. It also made a rattling sound when shaken, so they were shaking it. Eventually, a detailed replica was made by the Osaka branch of the Japan Space Phenomena Research Association, and there are photos of that online. But as for the real object, it's said that there is only one existing photo and that it was taken from a distance, and that all attempts of taking photos failed. So, after capturing it and bringing it home, it's usually said that the boy wrapped it in a plastic bag and put it in his backpack. The next morning, though, when he checked on it, it was gone. But that's okay. They saw it again the next day, and they caught it again. Again, it was taken home and hidden, and again, it disappeared by the next morning. This happened a couple times before it disappeared for good. Now, whether or not this one's true is, of course, up for debate. Quite a few people did see the small object, but only four, the boys, actually saw it flying. That, along with the fact that the first boy who found it, Michio, was somewhat known for being good at magic tricks, so there are those who think that maybe he was just playing a prank. There's even a teacher who came forward and said that one of them told him that it was faked. However, 4 years after this happening, a 9-year-old girl who also lived in Kochi is said to have seen a hat-shaped small object that descended from the sky and crashed. She even touched it, and it was covered with some slimy substance. She grew frightened and she ran away, but when she looked back over her shoulder, she saw it spin and shoot up into the sky. Number 2. The second of the big three is the Kofu incident, and this one sounds much more credible to me. It happened on February 23, 1975, in Kofu City, Yamanashi, in and around a vineyard. 2 7-year-old boys who were cousins, Masato Kawano and Katsuhiro Yamahata, reported that around 6:30 p.m. they were out roller skating when they saw 2 orange lights or orange glowing objects in the sky, one larger than the other. The lights turned and hovered over the boys so that when they looked up, they described them as perfectly circular. They could also see 3 spinning devices on the undersides. Suddenly, a black tubular thing began to stretch from one of the crafts and frightened the boys so much that they quickly took off their skates and went to hide in a nearby graveyard. While they were hiding, the larger one took off and headed toward Mount Atago. It was getting dark, so they decided to go on and head home. But on their way, they saw something that looked like a bright flame. So they did what any 7-year-old worth their salt would do. They ran after it. This led them down a dirt road and to a vineyard. The flame-like light either zoomed off or faded. Different newspapers reported it differently. But what was left was the craft. They described it as looking like a plate turned upside down with a dome on top. It was silver but with shining blue windows on the dome part. They also described that it was perfectly silent and there were strange characters written on it. There are drawings that they made, and they are quite specific and detailed. Now here's where it gets interesting. Masato was on one side of the craft, while Katsuhiro went to the other side to check it out. While Katsuhiro was gone, Masato saw a strange creature emerge. He described it as short, around 130 centimeters or 4 feet tall. The head and shoulders were large compared to the rest of the body. The skin was brown and it had no hair. And here it deviates from what you normally hear grays looking like. He said it had no eyes, no nose, nor a mouth. Just a bunch of wrinkles where they should be. It had 2 long pointy ears and 3 downward facing fangs. He thought the whole thing looked like a mask of some sort. He also said it had 4 fingers and was wearing some kind of silver full bodysuit. It made no sound when it walked. Suddenly, Katsuhiro heard a clattering sound and started to go back around the craft to where his cousin and where the sound was coming from. Before he got there, though, he was tapped on the shoulder twice. When he turned around, he saw the same creature that Masato would later describe. The boy said it spoke, but they couldn't understand it. Then they fled, with Masato carrying the terrified smaller Katsuhiro on his back because he was so scared he couldn't move. They also say that they stopped at the entrance of the vineyard, looked back, and they could see inside the craft. A similar alien-type creature was sitting there with really long arms, lots of high-tech stuff on all the walls. Now, of course, these kids are 7 years old, and you wonder how much of this is just their imaginations. But it's also reported that their recounts of the whole encounter were very consistent, and the details, too, didn't change. They also answered all the questions put to them by family or teachers or reporters without hesitation, and they certainly weren't faking their fear and shock either. They had encountered something. And that's not all. Other people also witnessed the glowing orange lights in the sky. For one, the boys' mothers. After reaching home and obviously excited and freaked out and trying to get someone to come out so they could show them what they'd seen, their mothers did go out. They got as close as 50 meters or 55 yards away and did indeed see some kind of orange ball-like object over the vineyard. It faded and blinked out, and by the time the boys' fathers arrived, a little later, it had already vanished. But there were quite a few other people who were in the area who also reported seeing a strange light in the sky, be it orange or white-blue, or an actual flying object. Dogs were noted to be barking more than usual at the time, too. Some people even reported seeing a luminous object later in the night of the same day, zigzagging and swooping down. Again, the boys told their story with emotions that just couldn't be faked, it said. Even skeptical people found that the story never faltered, no matter who they told or what questions were asked. All the details and the order of what happened remained consistent. It was also claimed that there was physical damage to the vineyard, marks in the soil, a concrete pillar that was leaning over, and even possible radioactive material left on the ground. About that last one, I did look deeper into that, and this is what I found. A teacher at a nearby high school just happened to have a national qualification as a radiation protection supervisor. So he went over and measured the area. He took 40 soil samples and tested them over a period of a month. The samples showed higher than normal radiation that decayed rapidly over time, which is characteristic of artificial radioactivity. Something was there, then it left. In 1982, the two boys were willingly hypnotized and questioned again about the encounter, and they repeated the same story. Katsuhiro Yamahata, the boy who was tapped on the shoulder and had to be carried by his cousin, says that to this day, the incident was so frightening that he cannot spend any time alone. For a long time, he stopped talking about it completely because of the backlash he was getting. But recently, he's speaking out more, especially since Kofu has decided to embrace the incident. Now they have Kofu UFO Day and their own character called Kofu Seijin, as well as UFO-shaped sweets, all kinds of branded merchandise, shirts and hats and tumblers and stickers and totes, etc. And yes, I bought a t-shirt. Number three. For number three, we have the Nikoro incident. And while I'd heard lightly about the Kera incident and the Kofu incident, I'd never heard of this one. And while researching, I found that it was wonderfully bonkers, and yet there is a part of the story that sounded familiar, and I had to track down where I'd heard it before, which led me to a totally different encounter, but very specific details that match up. I'll get to that in a minute. Okay, first, Nikoro is not as tidy as Kera and Kofu. It's often said that this is the least believable of the three, for a reason I'll get to in a minute, but that reason was actually misreporting, so there you go. And this one is interesting because it involves a real reported abduction that occurred three times. The first encounter happened on April 6, 1974, sometime between midnight and 3 a.m. in rural Hokkaido, Nikoro, Kitami City. Here we meet Yoshihiro Fujiwara, a young, honest farmer who lived with his mother. Side note, he's said to have no interest at all in UFOs before this incident. Anyway, he was woken up in the middle of the night because of a loud knocking on his front door, and his dog or dogs were barking outside. He got dressed, he went out, and there he met a strange alien being. Nearby, over his fields, hovered a disc glowing orange. The little alien creature was wild, to say the least. Yoshio actually made a sketch, and I'll have that on the website and the video if you're watching that. But let me see if I can describe it. First, he said it was child-sized, about 1 meter, 3 feet tall, with brownish, slimy, frog-like skin. All of it was covered in small yellow and blue protrusions. Over that, it appeared to be wearing a transparent, vinyl-like suit. He said there was some kind of electromagnetic waves or electricity that was constantly flowing around the creature, and he thought the suit protected him from that. It had four longish tentacles. Its head was octopus-like with slanted diamond-shaped eyes, pointy ears, like the Kofu incident, and a V-shaped nose. It was wearing a helmet and had an oval-shaped object on the top of that. Understandably, he tried to run away, but a blast of something like hot air suddenly rose up from beneath his feet, and he was sucked inside the disc. Now, I was reading about this in English and Japanese, and the stories differ quite a bit. One says that from here he was able to jump down, escape, and run back into the house. Another couple places said that he was actually taken away, threw a fit inside the ship, but was able to escape or was let out, where he was dropped to the ground several kilometers from his house, and he had to run home. That evening, his ears grew hot, and his fingertips trembled. When he touched a spoon, it bent limply in his hand. Coincidence that this is also the era of Uri Geller? I don't know. In another place, I read that this ability happened later and that he showed it to his friends. But what is most important is that suddenly he was able to telepathically talk to the alien creatures. So all that was on April 6th. On the 8th, 2 days later, at around 6:30 p.m., he received a message designating a meeting place. So off he went with two friends. Again, I've read that he was told that he was selected and that no one else could be taken along on the craft because they wouldn't survive. But there are also versions that have none of that. In the mountains, he went off alone at some point and was taken again by the craft. Since this was the second time, he was calmer and he paid attention to what the insides looked like. He also made a detailed drawing of this that I'll put on the website in the video. It's said that his friends a little bit later found that his footsteps led to a ledge off a cliff and where they just stopped. And at least one saying that they did see a UAP around at that time. Now here, Yoshihiro Fujiwara and his alien friend made one orbit around the moon and two around the Earth, and he was unceremoniously thrown from the craft around 8 p.m. His friends found him in the snow, unconscious and near comatose. During this second abduction, he was told telepathically that he had a tiny receiver placed in his left earlobe and a transmitter put into his right. Then the final trip happened on April 13th. Lots of different reports on this one. One said that he contacted them himself and he asked them to come back, that he wanted proof that he'd been abducted. Here's where the stories get weird and you'll find the big, "Sure, Jan," moment. Many say that this third time he was taken to Jupiter and was given a rock from the surface to show people as proof. We all know that Jupiter is a gas giant, so that immediately negates his whole story. But in Yoshihiro's defense, I read that it wasn't Jupiter but Titan that he visited. And then another story says that it wasn't he who said it, but his little brother, who was interviewed and just kind of threw up the idea. Well, maybe he went to Jupiter, and the newspapers ran with it. You can read that the rock was tested and that nothing was different than an Earth rock, or that it was tested and it was a little different than an Earth rock, or that it was tested and everything was inconclusive. There's all kinds of reports there. But there does seem to be some corroborating details. Someone also reported seeing an extremely bright light outside their window on that first abduction night, but that person was too afraid to look out. Friends and witnesses verified that he could suddenly bend spoons, and he really was found unconscious in the snow by people. And after that third abduction, where I guess he was found in the snow again, it was actually the NHK film crew who found him, and there's a recording where the intensity and the realism of his statements are such that they don't believe that it was staged. So Fujiwara kind of believed himself to be a contact man for this other non-human life, and things got a little weird with him saying his role is to delay natural disasters and that he could teleport and other stuff. He died in 2021. So with this one, I thought it was interesting that there's a similarity between him and a man named Whitley Strieber, who also claims to have a mysterious alien implant in his earlobe. And I don't know much about Strieber's story, but I just thought it was interesting that they said the same thing. And when I found this about Fujiwara, it was all written in Japanese, so I'm pretty sure Strieber wouldn't have heard of it. I just thought that was interesting. Okay, this fourth one might be the most credible of all. And it's also the most recent. It's called the Kaiyo Maru case and has all kinds of real documentation. While the big three, the Kera, the Kofu, and the Mikoro, are pretty well known and talked about today, they also occurred during the Showa era, during the whole UFO boom, etc., etc., and they happened so long ago that the stories are getting murky. But this one happened in the 1980s. The Kaiyo Maru is a government research vessel equipped for high-precision resource surveys and ocean environmental surveys. We're talking a 2,644-ton ship that carried out fishery surveys all across the world's waters. And it had two encounters a couple years apart. But the first one, in 1984, the ship was near the Falkland Islands in the Atlantic Ocean. And this was December 18th. A navigation officer on watch saw a strange light near Orion, moving in a zigzagging fashion, before suddenly accelerating and disappearing. Then another would appear again, moving haphazardly across the sky. And this happened again and again and again. And it happened 8 times, actually, in roughly 10-minute intervals. 2 of the times, the object brightened suddenly. The officer said before he went on duty, his commanding officer told him, and I don't know, but I think this is very telling, "If you see anything strange, wake me up. I don't care what it is, anything you can think of, anything that's weird, wake me up immediately." So, like, why would he say that, right? You kind of wonder. But he did say it, and because of that, he was woken, and he could witness for himself the last 2 moving lights. The exact locations, directions, and times of the lights were all recorded. Then the second incident was in 1986 on the western side of Midway Island in the Central Pacific. On December 21st, at around 6 p.m., Second Officer Yoji Sasaki, who was on the bridge at the time, spotted a huge oval-shaped object on the radar, 5 kilometers to the port of the ship. It was still light out, but there was nothing there when he looked. He searched where the object should be through his binoculars, and still nothing. Then, around 10:30 p.m., Third Officer Masaki Shimojo, who had taken over watch duty along with 4 others, confirmed again that the radar started picking up some huge object nearby. It was around 300 meters across, so almost 1,000 feet. Again, they couldn't confirm it visually. The UFO then circled the ship very quickly several times, made a sharp turn heading directly toward the ship. Then just before it hit, it made another sharp turn and zoomed away. The speed they measured was more than 4,900 kilometers an hour. Then once more, an hour or so later, one of the crew watching the radar saw the huge craft appear again directly behind the ship. Everyone scrambled to look for it, but despite the moon being out, they saw nothing. This time, too, it sped up, once more aiming for the ship. One of the men screamed, "It's going to hit us." But there was no impact. Instead, it disappeared from the radar, and everyone heard a roaring sound that they described as something cutting through the air, a sound they'd never heard before. Something like roaring, like gull. It came from overhead. The sound stopped, and they saw a huge, intense red and yellow light ahead of them that flew off at an incredible speed and disappeared. And these incidences were all reported in newspapers and TV, and because there were 9 witnesses altogether, all scientists, and plenty of notes and recordings of what happened, the story was even written up in the Nikkei Science Journal, September 1988. There are also those who believe that it might have been like the Americans doing some kind of military training or something, but also, you know, did they have that technology back then? Okay, I'll leave you here for now. Keep an eye or ear out for my revisiting of the Utsurobune, the hollow ship, a little later this week. And thank you all for listening. Stay safe and stay well. And I'll talk to you again in a couple days. Bye-bye.